Mr. O'Sullivan, reel 16. Right, Mr. O'Sullivan, Mr. Jackson, you mentioned.
Well, they organised a camp concert. They had a band in there. And they organised a camp concert, and this Jackson, he was a Jew boy, and he took a female role. And after that camp concert, he never came out of that role. He was dressed in a frock, very much like the bloke on that TV programme he was doing. What was it called? He was an American. Anyway, he never took that frock off. After he was always, he became real effeminate. But he was a nice enough bloke. I don't mean anything wrong about him. He was a nice enough bloke, but he was just effeminate after that.
What did other people feel about that?
Well, everybody just didn't take any notice. He just, well, or his jacko look. But he was a well-educated fellow. He was one of the few people who could speak Italian and German, you know, fluently enough to. But he took that role on as a female. It must have gone to his head, I think. I don't know.
So the camp was a place where you could like tolerate eccentricities in people.
Oh yeah. Yeah. I often talked about it later. All the men in that camp, there were no women, and there was only about three who were gay. Yeah, I don't think Jackson was gay. And if they caught the gay blokes together, the high ties would take them and put them in they had a prison there, and they'd put them all in the same cell and watch them. But, I mean, for... I don't know. But it was... a lot of... He used to camp concerts, he used to play at night. I mean, in Italy, it was warm enough. You could stop outside all night if you wanted. You could sleep on the grass outside. Because every so often they used to shut the huts and fumigate them because of the bed lice and fleas and lice. You know. And then when they did that, that taught had to sleep outside anyway. And then he went back in the next morning, oh, it was a smell all over.
Now, you mentioned tin bashing in the camp. Was there a lot of that going on, yeah. Making utensils?
Everybody did. Well, that's everybody. No, there wasn't everybody doing it. There was only people doing it who could do it. And they used to get a tin, and then they would get another tin, and they'd cut strips out of the tin and fold them in. And then they would make a shape of a handle, put them on the side of the mug, and then they would cut another strip and put it round the tin to hold the handle in place. And there's men also doing carvings in soap. You could get your cap badge carved, and it would cost you maybe 10 cigarettes. Maybe two. There again was the value of cigarettes. You could get it done if you wanted. And there were men doing wood carvings, taking wood off the bedposts and carving it. Because some of them had razors, some of them had, they must have had parcels from home. And there was all sorts of activities. And
what about
card schools, particularly bridge.
What about kind of education classes and so on like that? Was any of that going on?
Yes, there was books. Books was available.
And how many of those were there? A lot. Or?
Well, no, you could go to, you could, if you wanted a book, you had to put your name down with the tent, or not the tent, you put the commander. There's always somebody in charge of that particular hut. Not in charge as. But he represented you to the Italian authorities. Now, if you wanted a book, you had to go to him and say, ask him what books was available. The most popular one was the Bible. It was there. if you wanted a copy of the Bible, of the Old Testament or the New Testament, you'd go and tell him. And he'd say, well, it's out until a week on Wednesday, and you can have it for 24 hours. And they'd say, well, the so-and-so books allow this. Magazines, same as in Lenin books, I've got the stories, you know, romances, well, there weren't any romances, but nobody wanted romances. Those books, but you could only have them, there were so many men there that the books was, you know, there was a premium. And you could only have it for, and you couldn't say every book on Wednesday and then go again and get a book the following Wednesday. You'd never be a fortnight or 3 weeks even before you was entitled to have a book.
So they were in very short supply.
Yeah, they were definitely the address.
Now, you're in this camp. What about news from outside?
Well, in every hut there was a notice board. And every day there was always a newspaper, a camp newspaper called the Griff, was up on the, and it gave all the modern, all the latest news, what was happening and where it was happening. So obviously there was somebody had a radio in the camp because the news was up to date, and it was there for everybody to read.
So you're aware of things like progress of the war,
yeah,
on other fronts and so on, bombing raids.
I was feeling a lot better about it. And when the ITAS packed in, we thought, oh, nervous, we're all right. But...
Mm-hmm. Well, we'll talk about that when we get to that stage. So there was a radio, but you didn't know who
had it? No. There may be more than one.
Was there any kind of organisation of like escape attempts and so on, so-called escape committees
and things like that? There may have been in the camp itself, but I never knew anybody escape.
What about talking about escape? Was that a subject of this?
No, not really, not. It was, as I've said before, I wasn't really interested in anything what was going on in the camp at that time. I was depressed.
So how long did it take for your friend Kendall to get you out of this?
A couple of months. Maybe a bit longer than that. It was a long while before I would get out. Before I would really talk to him. But he did eventually get me out of bed, and the first place he took me was to the showers. And wash all my kit. And he washed most of my kit.
And you said there were other people in the same position as you that felt the same.
One fellow tried to commit suicide.
Could you just talk us through maybe the reasons for this depression? You're in this camp.
Well, I don't know why I was so depressed with it. But, well, we'd just come from Sicily. Things hadn't been too good in Sicily. This camp was better than Sicily, but I was in such a low state of... The food wasn't the best, it was macaroni alternating with rice every day. They said there would... Some days there'd be meat in the... in the food, but it was usually just a greasy film on top of the... And it was either rice or macaroni, day in and day out.
So the food had an effect on people's health?
It did. And the cooks who was doing it were PLWs, obviously. And they were getting better fed than everybody else, which was an actual phenomenon anyway. But the food was terrible. It was the worst we ever had, I think, in Italy.
What about the Red Cross parcels? Were they...?
There was more regular. There was maybe one a fortnight, maybe one every 3 weeks. But you see, the Griff, that's one of the first things you look for in the Griff. Red Cross parcels. Red Cross parcels will be issued Wednesday. Or Red Cross parcel, train of aircraft fast was being destroyed by Allied bombers, which was often easy to repair. That meant that there weren't any Red Cross parcels for whether the high tides of Princeton or whether you never knew. But that's what would be in the grip.
And that was a weekly paper, was it?
Well, if there was anything special in the news, it was there, on the following, on the notice board. No, it was a weekly deal.
Was there any attempt by the Italians to present their slant on the news to you?
Not at all.
What about radio? Did they, in other camps, apparently the Italians would play the radios and let people.
There was loudspeakers. Yeah, no idea was going.
And what would they play?
Well, a lot of them played the British records. Bing Crosby was a very popular man, but
for the Italians as well.
Well, the radios they belonged to the Italians, but there was the DJ, whatever you like to call him, was most probably a POW, and he would play what records, whatever they had. They played most of the day. The only time the Italians loaded the advance, if there was any particular thing had to be done, in one case, they wanted the field clearing. Everybody in back into huts, into your own hut. I don't know what that was for, but it happened once, and that came over the loudspeakers. Everybody into the huts. That was not long before the ITS packed in. Whether they intended, I don't know what they intended, but they cleared the field.
Now, in terms of mail to England and from England to you, how was that at this stage?
Well, funny, but you maybe get five or six letters at the same time, a bunch of letters all at once. Maybe next time there was a mail call, you didn't get any at all. But mail call would be maybe every couple of days. The mail was coming in regularly, but it's such a big camp that you weren't always lucky enough to get a letter. And as I say, sometimes you got three or four, especially when we first got there, which it had followed us again. We got into a permanent place where it caught up with us.
Were you able to communicate much information back to you, your parents and so on?
All you could tell was, I'm in Italy. I'm well. You always tell me you're well anyway. And I'll see you soon. But you couldn't tell them. Well, there's nothing to tell them, really, was there?
And what about their letters to you? Were they equally?
Well, they were equally not. Well, they told you about family. They didn't talk about the war. My parents sent me some. I never got a pass for all the time I was in Schmiedeberg until the day we left Schmiedeberg, and then two parcels arrived, and both parcels had bare boots in them. Because that's what I'd been wearing, wooden clogs, and my feet was terrible.
Yeah, we'll get onto that when we get to Germany.
Oh, yeah, got there.
But in Italy, any parcels in Italy?
I never received a parcel in Italy.
Now, I think we've talked off the tape about, some prisoners would get parcels of cigarettes and things, and I know you've got a story about that when we talk about Germany, but in Italy. Did that create problems as well if somebody got a big parcel of?
Well, no, because parcels was yours, private. If you wanted to share them with your friends, that was up to you. Because the most contents of the parcel was either cigarettes or sweets. I mean, they didn't send food because it would have been no good to tell them, got there, would it? So it was cigarettes, chocolate. And if there was an influx of parcels with cigarettes in, then the value of the cigarettes in the camp went down. It was like. And a lot of people got parcels. But there was people, same as Rolly Wallace, who had been there for quite some time. The more established prison.
I think you also mentioned off the tape that when you arrived at this camp, a lot of the prisoners were malnourished. Could you just describe that?
Well, I think I always think it was that the fault of the rice and the macaroni, because that was the stable diet, rice and macaroni. We had it alternate days, and some of the prisoners got to have been there some time, was thin, but pot-bellied, really pot-bellied. And for young men, they look, you know, they really look terrible. And it's, I mean, I've only realised late since the time that it was, they was undernourished, and they were pot-bellied.
What was their morale like, the men that were there, that had been there a long time?
Well, when we went in and told them that, you know, there was Jerry was being chased out of North Africa, it gave them a boost. And that went all on the, in the Griff newspaper. The editor of the Griff would come round and interview, well, not interview, but talk to, in the winter, you know, when he come in, and where was you, what did you do, and how was it going, and...
What kind of man was he?
Well, he was, I don't know what he'd be, I think he'd be a journalist in like prior life, but he was a young man, and he always had a clipboard, and a pen, but he wrote in, his own, well, it looked something like yours, scribble, you know, how the hell everybody went, I don't know. But all he would ask you was, when was you captured, where was you captured, what was it like, have you heard anything about what's happening now? Well, you see, when we got there, into Italy, into that camp, there had already been some of our mob had gone in before us, because they'd gone straight up there from Africa. So that we weren't able to tell them anything different to what they'd already told them about, you know, about the program. We did realise that the Germans was losing Africa altogether.
There was no officers in this camp.
No.
And did you?
Yeah, there was. There was three officers, I believe, who were in charge of the camp, but we never met them.
And so if there's like a senior, there'll be like a senior.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Do any of those stand out from this period? Any of the personalities we haven't talked about?
This period I was really, no real, I can remember Huey Kendall, I can remember Jackson, who was, as I say, Wally Duke, who looked after me when I had, but It was just a blank of day to day. Everything was just the same.
Mm. You mentioned Wally Dukes looked after you when you had what?
Yeah, I had a touch of malaria and they took me into hospital, and Wally Dukes, who was another scumbag lad, was a medical orderly in the hospital. But they had no medicines, didn't they?
Now, around about this time there was the Allied invasion. At Salerno, and then at
they had an invasion of Sicily first, didn't they?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's that as well. How did that affect
well, when we knew that, and that's something else that appeared in the Griff. Sicily invaded from Africa, from the other side. Well, I mean, it wasn't far across, was it? Sicily invaded, and then through the Sicily invasion, successful. So I thought, oh, well, we are winning the war. And we were. At that time, we were feeling more. We were feeling better about things. And at that time, also, when Huey Kendall said, "Have you seen the group?" And I said, "No, he hadn't." He said, "Well, that camp where you was in Sicily's been overrun, they've taken it and they've taken Sicily." And from then on I started, I don't know whether it was Hurricane or whether it was the fact that the Allies were getting the top side on, but I began to improve. But I think Hurricane was the biggest help in that. Just somebody to get you going again.
Now, with the Allied invasion of mainland Italy, can you describe how that had its effect?
We didn't know they'd invaded Italy. We never did get to. Obviously, we knew later, but We didn't know at the time that they'd invaded Italy.
Could you just talk us through what actually happened over those few days then?
Well, it just carried on. Life was just the same as ever. There was no, that was the period, no Grip news about the invasion of Italy. None at all. So when we didn't find out that Italy had been invaded until the Italians actually packed in.
And how did that happen?
We thought we were going to be liberated.
Mm. But how did the Italians actually pack in, if you could just describe that within the camp?
They just disappeared. We got up one morning and there was no Italians there. The camp gates was wide open. And everybody was amazed. And I was at that time, I was in hospital. And one of the dukes came and said, well, the Italians have buggered off and asked what we're doing the same. He said, and if I get home, I'll let mother and mum, dad know you're all right. And that was it. And then a lot of the men just went. Some of them really attempted to escape. But a lot of them just went out of the camp into the village or nearby, whatever it was nearby. They got the wine and they just went mad. And the same night, the Germans arrived. You could hear the tanks, armoured cars anyway, rolling up to the... And we was out in the... Nobody was in the huts. It was all out in the field and walking about. And the Germans took out the loudspeaker, come on, and acting, and that was it. We was under back of the PLWs. But the people had gone out. The Germans rounded them up, but they wouldn't let them come back into the camp to collect the gear. And I think we had a couple of days, and then we then trained again for Germany.
Yeah, we'll talk about the move to Germany, but I just want to keep on this period when the Italian guards have left. The people that were serious about escaping, how did you know they were serious about us? Did they take...
They took equipment with them.
Like what? What would they take?
First of all, they went looking for... They went to the... Looking for food, which could be... What should last them 2 or 3 days. You know, tin food. Tin... Out of Red Cross parcels. They came around any cheese. And they were swapping... Some people give them that. But then what was genuinely going to escape, they come round. Wally Dukes asked me if I had anything. All I had was cigarettes. Because Rolly Wallace had already been taken out of that camp. And he'd been moved somewhere else. And all I... So Rolly Wallace... I gave Rolly Wallace what cigarettes I had. And he went out and bought food from his... Well, from POWs. Who would swap food, tin food for him, and he invited for a Swiss army knife. He said, it's no use having tin food if I can't open the tin. And I mean, and there was a lot doing that. A lot of genuine people were going to try to get away, but then they all became, the British army, British command, told all POWs to stay where they were. Some did it and others some didn't. And Wally Dukes was the one I'm looking at.
What did you think about escaping? Did it go through your mind?
Well, if I'd gone with anybody, I would have gone with Wally, with Huey Kendall. But as I say, I'd just been coming out of hospital with malaria. I was still in hospital when the Italians packed it up, but then there was nobody in the hospital anyway. Only 2 blocks with a dysentery. Wally was off, he was the hospital orderly. So I went back to me.
What about Kendall? What was your last memory of him? What was his preparations for?
Cheerio.
And what did he take with him?
He took his same as Wally Dukes. He took what food he could get, which he knew would last. And he went.
Did they say anything about what the plans were, how they were?
No, he said he was going to. They were both going to do the best to get to British lines. How all he deals got through so quick, I don't know. I've met him since, like. I've talked to him since. And he's not about to talk about it.
And how long did it take him?
It took him roughly a month. And what, within 6 weeks, he was back in England. And he said the worst thing when he got back to England, when he went back into, when he was recalled into the army, you know, he got leave, same as when he went back into the army, he got the impression that the officer in charge of his camp thought it was a disgrace that they'd ever been captured. You know, that he said that was the feeling he got, that there was a disgrace to British Army for being captured.
You mean the man that was in charge of him when he was back in
camp? The camp he went back to after his leave.
Yeah, he's a camp in England.
Yeah.
And Kendall, what did you hear about him?
He was 6 months later, he got back home and he died soon after.
What did he die of, do you know?
I don't know, not really. I had a letter from his wife. Well, I didn't have a letter from his wife. My mother got a letter from his wife. He wrote to my mother when he got home. And just shortly after that, we got a letter from his wife saying that he'd died. So whether he died from any disease he'd picked up, or whether he died soon after, I don't know from who I don't know.
About what percentage of the prisoners do you think were serious, made a serious...
A serious attempt?
Yeah.
About 10%.
And how many went out and...
50%. Just went out wild, with no intention. The doors is open and we're out. I mean, they took nothing with them. They broke into shops, wine shops. Some women were molested, obviously. Well, I say obviously, it's not obvious that it happened. And I think that was a lot of the reason why the Germans wouldn't let them back into the camp to get them. When we'd been moved out, they wouldn't let them back in. There was near us. It was only the other side of the wire, but they were absolutely isolated from the camp they'd been in.
Now, the Germans moved in. What did they do over those two or three days that you've talked about?
They talked to us over the phone, over the loudspeakers, that we'd be transported to Germany, and if there was no trouble, there would be no injuries. Just behave yourselves, and they, basically the British command, British High Command said a POW was to stay where they were, and the Germans issued the same, played the same record sort of thing, you know, and most of them did.
How did these German troops strike you, the ones?
These were frontline troops. They were frontline troops, what came up. And they were in battle dress order, you know, they were dressed for battle. And they surrounded the camp with light armoured vehicles. And they fired weapons into the air that night they came up, and which is to say, we're here. I don't know if they injured anybody, but they fired the weapons that night, and they had their lights on the vehicles. Because the high ties had disconnected the lights on the turrets, you know, on the next night the Germans were doing.
Now, during this period, how was there still a distribution of food and so on?
There was still a lot of food, but it was distributed by the British Army, you know, by the British NCOs who was in the camp.
And then when the Germans took over, what happened?
They organised it. But it was still the same thing, it was still... rice, well, they only had the same amount of food, didn't they?
So there's no real change on that?
No real change at all, and there was no bartering with the Germans.
Did people try?
Yeah.
And what happened?
They didn't want to know. If you had any cigarettes, they would leave a take them off you. If you tried to buy the cigarettes with a German for, say, a salam, a sausage, or whatever they had, nobody took the cigarettes.
They'd just take them?
Yeah. They wouldn't barter at all, and they wouldn't come inside the camp. They never offered to come in. The only people who come inside the camp were German officers. All the remainder of them were on guard around the perimeter and outside the perimeter.